I hope that your evening is going good tonight. Sorry that I've been away. I know part two of our final episode of season one was supposed to drop over the weekend. I couldn't get to it because I just started a new job. But now we are back. And I'm hoping to do my best to stay caught up. So I'll be working hard in between my job and life. And this podcast, trying to record as many episodes as I can. Anyhow, if you weren't here for part one and you didn't listen to part one is where we introduce who the Zodiac is, why the Zodiac is called the Zodiac, who the Zodiac killed, and the letters that he had sent. Now, this part, we are going to be talking about the theories and suspects of the Zodiac Killer. He hasn't actually really been caught. There's been talk that he was caught and was released and had a heart problem and so on and so forth right before the law enforcement could charge him with anything. There's even possible talk about the Zodiac being two people, but we'll get into all the theories that we can find. So this is going to be a much more investigative episode into the theories. We might also go back into part one, you know, on certain aspects, maybe not. Definitely with the prisoner that escaped, as we talked about in part one. But let's get into the theories without me rambling for 3 minutes. The first theory talks about the Zodiac Killer possibly being identified by his son. If you haven't read the book, it's called The Most Dangerous Animal of All. And top of that, it goes into a guy named Gary L. Stewart that wrote about searching for his father and then finding possibly that his father was the Zodiac. So in 2014, The Most Dangerous Animal of All was published by Gary Stewart, which he claimed that his father, Errol Van Beth Jr., was the Zodiac Killer. Evidence included the similarity between Beth's visage and the police sketches of the Zodiac, and a scar on Beth's right index finger that matches that in a fingerprint left at a Zodiac crime scene. Furthermore, publicist Chris Harris claims that he saw Beth at a diner in 1969 near the site of one of the killings. Harris was in the area at the time making a documentary about the Zodiac when he sat beside a man who resembled Best. According to Harris, Best turned to him and said, "You have no idea what it's like to have to kill." Now, once again, these are just theories. Whether or not Errol Van Best Jr. was the Zodiac, you kind of got to take it how you want, with a grain of salt or not. Let's go with the second theory. By the way, I'm just going off of Ranker. I'll go probably far-fetched sometimes, sometimes not. But right now we are on Ranker. This theory actually I've been really interested in, where the theory talks about rejection. Why did he only go after young couples? And that's a question that I asked in part one. He had a thing for killing young couples in California. It was only young couples besides the one, which was the cab driver. But was the Zodiac at some point rejected, and this is how he deals with it? It's really, really popular amongst serial killers to act upon the past. If you haven't watched a lot of Criminal Minds, like I said, Criminal Minds is a fictional show, but can be based off of real psychology of a killer. It's where a killer is somehow dealing with his past and is furious with his past and can't deal with his past, so he goes out and gets what he wants because he couldn't get it in his past or her past. So the theory is a man named Randy Kinney claims his friend Lewis Myers admitted to being the Zodiac before he died in May 2002 of cirrhosis of the liver. Myers claimed he was motivated to kill couples because he had suffered a breakup. Myers did go to high school with two of the victims and worked at the same restaurant as the third victim. He also worked at a military surplus store, giving him access to the type of boots Zodiac wore. I know that we didn't get that part into part one, but one of the blueprints that was found at one of the crime scenes was a Navy style boot. That's how it kind of came together. He could have had military experience. That's why he could get away with killing someone, drive away, pull up really fast, and just, you know, go about his life. In fact, he had been deployed to Germany for 2 years, during which time there was a lapse in all communications from the Zodiac. Going into the military theory still, could the Zodiac have been a Vietnam vet struggling with the war? Some have suggested Zodiac was deployed to Vietnam and killed there, ending his crime spree. This would also explain, once again, the military issue boots of a type mostly worn by the Navy, and what witnesses at one scene described him as having cut crew. Or Kuka, I mean, sorry about that. And if you look at any of the sketches, he does have a crew cut, similar to what the Vietnam era of military would have to had. You can see his sketch as, you know, a kind of military type face with military type haircut. You know, his, he doesn't look pleased at all, you know, none of that. And as we realize, we see that similarity. He probably was a vet at some, you know, throughout his life. He did go to war probably, was probably deployed, and so on and so forth. Now this one, I never heard this theory before, but this is where it talks about the Zodiac possibly being a convicted child molester. Now, you may have heard this name before. His name is Arthur Leigh Allen. He was a convicted child molester who allegedly told friends that he was a Zodiac. He wore a Zodiac wristwatch, which is where some theorize Zodiac got his name, as the brand uses the same crosshair symbols as the logo. And you can look up online and see the Zodiac watch, and you can see the symbol of the watch. Obviously, when you're hand-drawing, the symbol is going to look a little bit more sloppy, but it's still the same symbol and the resemblance of the Zodiac. Police found a typewriter in Allen's trailer which did match the brand that the letters were written from. Whether it's that typewriter or not, it was still the same match. But no hard evidence ever surfaced linking him to the Zodiac. Then he died in 1992. Because so much evidence linked Allen to the killings, none of his DNA and handwriting didn't match any found on the Zodiac letters. Some have theorized Ellen had an accomplice. He would carry out the murders, but then a different man would write the letters. You know, another great thing to keep an open mind on with murder writing letters. Not all murderers want to be caught with handwriting. So, if Alan did write those, and since his handwriting did not match, he purposely wrote in a different style of handwriting, and when he was asked to match that handwriting, he purposely did not match the handwriting that he used as the Zodiac. It's very, very common sometimes. You will see that criminal that's really far out there, that, you know, blends in with the crowd, and he knows how to change his, you know, actions. He knows how to cover that up. The next one was the Zodiac possibly being a police officer. This stems off of some of the police procedures, you know, that he may have known. For instance, he often attacked in very public places, almost as if he knew when cops wouldn't be there. His attacks also occurred in many different jurisdictions, causing confusion and evidence spreading amongst all the police precincts. Also, a Zodiac fingerprint is theorized to have been a fake, something that would require forensic know-how. I'm not saying this is, you know, a good theory, because it's a good theory to a certain extent, and I'm going to explain why. For one, now, even back then, I guess, if you read a lot of crime books, watched a lot of crime TV shows back then, you know, and definitely James Bond, at some point along the line, you would have to realize, if I leave a fake fingerprint, this is how it's done. I've read it. I've been shown it. I can reenact it. To say that he was a police officer is not really that great of a theory, because he could have known the times of each precinct. And this goes kind of back into part one, which I did not talk about, but I talked about a bit of what I'm going to discuss, is whenever he killed a young couple, the male survived, but the female didn't. And that was only two instances. But one of the females, he used a telephone booth almost right next to her house. It seemed like he has been watching her. So in the same ideology, if we put that into a profile of the Zodiac, he didn't need to be a police officer to know the times of a police officer going about doing their rounds. If he knew where that one female victim lived, he had been stalking her. He had been watching her. He had been knowing when she goes home, who she hangs out with, where she's going to be. The same ideology goes with the police. No matter which precinct, no matter if it's far out there from the first murder, second murder, or not, he probably watched the police officers. Whether or not he had a scanner or not, like I said, that's unknown. He probably did watch them. He stalked them. He knew their whereabouts. He knew that they were going to be here at X, Y, and Z. At this time, you know, one officer leaves at this time, the other goes, stays, whatnot. He knew their routine by watching them. And as military, no, I'm not military, I should put that out there. If he was actual military, part of the Navy, that's something that they're really good at. In the military, you have to watch. You have to stay alert. You have to know when this person is leaving when this person isn't. You become really good at that, knowing what is happening all around you at any time. This theory, I never heard this theory either, but did the Zodiac use a dead child's identity? A man who bore a striking resemblance to the Zodiac police sketch was found to have stolen his name. His name was Joseph Newton Chandler. And he stole that name from a boy who had died in 1945. Associates have stories of strange and erratic behavior by the reclusive man. Did he start killing in Ohio after he fled, and did he steal an identity or two? That's something that's out there. Now this one's probably far-fetched, but this case that I'm going to bring up is kind of oddly similar. If you're not familiar with the Texarkana Moonlight Murders, and I know I did pronounce that wrong. You can see there's some similarities between the two. The similarities are the hoods as masks. They both target young couples on lovers' lanes. Both primarily use handguns, use flashlights, blind their victims. Both abruptly cease their activity. And theory is that the reason the TMM stopped his killing is that he fled to California to resume his activities as the Zodiac. Yet, there is one problem with the theory. It's the time of the two. TMM was active in the mid-40s, whereas the Zodiac committed his crimes in the late 60s and early 70s. That would mean at the time of the TMM murders, TMM would have to have been in his early 20s at the oldest during the period he was active in order to be at the appropriate age of the Zodiac based on witness descriptions. But this is not, you know, completely thrown out. I'm going to throw something out though of this case, and that just because the time disparities are a little bit different doesn't mean that he did switch. Yet, if he was in the military during the time of the Team M, that would disrupt this theory. It would blow the theory and shred it. The theory would no longer be existing, as we know from, you know, the other theory with the military. He was deployed to Germany and the murder stopped and then started again. Or at least they lost contact, I should say. So it's not that far-fetched where this do. At least be really, really close together. Yet, if he was deployed out of Germany or anywhere during the TMM murders, the TMM theory would no longer work. That's only time, you know, time difference that could actually possibly happen. This one is not that far-fetched, but it is. This is where people think that the Zodiac was protected by political higher-ups. This comes from a book called The Zodiac Killer Cover-Up, aka The Silence Badge. Retired Highway Patrolman Lyndon Lafferty claimed in his book, The Zodiac Killer Cover-Up, that he had and a handful of other retired law enforcement officers known as the Madamus 7 discovered the identity of the Zodiac way back in 71. However, The killer was protected by powerful political intervention. On March 5th, 2016, Lafferty did die, never revealing the identity of the suspect. This one is, in my opinion, thrown out there. Even the one that we're going to be talking about, it's not impossible, but, you know, could be. I guess it. Imagine if it was Ted Bundy. No, I'm not saying Ted Bundy's the Zodiac, but Ted Bundy was in a political stance, and nobody realized Ted Bundy was a serial killer. But in this case, it's a Zodiac. Zodiac is in some sort of political form, even if it's just being protected by political leaders. He's still in political stance, just in there, not being exposed. This one, like I said, is going to be far-fetched, and this is where people theorize, was he a former Manson family member? After the arrest of Charles Manson and during the Zodiac slayings, police looked into any connections between the two. The most plausible connection was Bruce Davis, a man who lived in North California at the time of the murders and dropped off the grid, supposedly working construction at Riverside City College, where an alleged Zodiac murder took place. He was in Berkeley during another Zodiac attack in the region, as enjoined the Mason family engaging in two murders with the cult. I'm not saying that. I take that back. That's probably a little bit more plausible. You know, whether or not it happened, but we see a very oddly similar connection that we see with a lot of these. And if you listen to all the episodes, definitely any of the highway episodes with truck drivers, we see a similarity. That similarity is the killer killed or worked in that area at the time of the murder. In this case, with Bruce Davis, he worked in Riverside. Then a murder happened associated with the Zodiac killer. He also worked at another location where another Zodiac murder took place. When we have those two connections, it's very, very plausible that he could have been the murderer. Yet, after joining the Mason cult, it gets a little bit fuzzy. Because that means that at the time, Davis may not actually have been telling Charles Mason or, you know, even engaging in what they were engaging in on their own time. He just went out and did what he did, came back. Which would be a little bit odd at that end, because Mason family brought in couples or young people. They didn't necessarily kill young people. They wanted young people to enjoy a freer life. You know, the power of free will, the power of experiencing God through LSD, that type of scenario. Bruce Davis wouldn't necessarily fit that description if he was part of the Mason family, because that wasn't Mason's ideology. Yes, they did kill, but the ideology was free will, God, sex, drugs, and bringing in young couples or young people, not killing them. He had other people do that. At the same time, that's where it could cross over. Was a Unabomber the Zodiac killer? A guy named Ted Kaczynski may have been responsible for other lethal crime sprees before his time as the infamous Unabomber. These included the Zodiac killings, during which Kaczynski lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. Other similarities between both of them are communication with the police, media, and the use of ciphers. The Zodiac also threatened to use bombs, as we talked about the school bus cipher, and he never did though. But there are similarities. This one is close, but there are some things that just ideally don't fit. Ted lived in the San Francisco area. The only person that died in that area was a cab driver. That means he would have had to travel to Riverside, to Lake Berryessa, you know, Maple County, all of those other places. The things that do fit, obviously, with the communications with the media, police, and the bombs. The only things, besides San Francisco and the cab driver. Last episode, we talked about a prisoner escaping. Let me research this really fast. And let's see what we can find. If you didn't remember, or if you haven't listened, I should say, or don't remember anything about that, one of the theories that we briefly touched upon was at the time of one of the murders, according to a police officer, the inmate that escaped, stabbed a guard, and then escaped, I should say, then fled. He needed a car, and he probably was already stealing cars, you know, all of that, but in California at the time of the murders, he needed another car. Let's see. This prison, if I had already said it just a few seconds ago, is located in Montana. Let's quickly skim this article. So let's just start from the beginning. This article is from March 15th of 2014. This is coming from person's point of view of some sort, but let's get into this. Today, when I think about all the different types I met in that excuse for a penitentiary, this man remains my most uncomfortable memories. Striking words from a convicted serial killer. I should have said quote-unquote first before I read that, but a convicted serial killer who in 1961 became one of America's most wanted fugitives, appearing on FBI's 10 most wanted list, said that. That man was Edward Wayne Edwards. And the man he was talking about was Donald Lee Bajok, promulgated as a prime candidate for the murders of 5 people in Northern California in the late 1960s. Now let me tell you this. The Zodiac had 5 victims, known victims. There's possible of 36. 5 victims in California this guy had. This extract was taken from Edwards' autobiography entitled Metamorphosis of a Criminal. And who is this Donald guy? Let's just try to get to that point. So the penitentiary that Donald and Edward were staying at was referred to Old Montana State Prison. approximately 3.5 miles west of Deer Lodge. Donald Liebejoc had spent 11 years at the prison, serving time for the brutal slaying of Deputy Otto Forstin, who was shot 5 times in the neck and chest in the small town of Joplin, Montana, on October 5, 1957. The prison was built in 1871, and it suffered badly with overcrowding. The walls couldn't really keep them in at some point. It seated around 600 and hosted various events at the theaters, including theater groups, movies, concerts, and religious services, providing temporary relief to the inmates. Donald Liebejoc was no exception to all of this, performing many jobs within the prison, notably as a kitchen clerk, upholsterer, and garment maker, but in an attempt to escape his reality, may have ascended to an altogether different level of existence, driven by fascination for Egyptian literature and science fiction, and paired the striking memories of Edwards, Liebejoc, strangled by rigors of daily life in prison, sought to escape into the non-material realm of fantasy, embracing afterlife, which go back to the motivation of the Zodiac Cypress and Killer. Zodiac mentioned that he killed because he was preparing people for the afterlife, getting army for the afterlife, that type of nonsense of the afterlife, and it seems like this Donald guy was also into that type of stuff. That, and once again, it would become a reality. The shadow of Old Montana Prison became the embodiment of all things evil when the headlights of a car driven by Donald Liebejoc flickered across the dark, twisting road of Lake Herman, the very first last murder, on December 20th of 1968. And his route to paradise that he sought for 11 years was just moments away. This is when, you know, everything kind of started coming together with the Zodiac. A chapter that has left its mark for over 4 decades was the very first murder, then the next, and the next, and when people started realizing there was a serial killer, it's left a forever lasting mark. Kevin Robert Brooks has examined in depth the early life of Donald Liebejoc that may have succeeded the very inception of the Zodiac Killer. Through to the numerous letters and cards that he mailed to the San Francisco Chronicle, along with other publications, he believed that his search for America's most notorious serial killer may be coming to an end. On January 9th, 1974, he examined what may have been the final letter sent to the San Francisco Chronicle, called the Exorcist Letter. This was believed, and kind of still is to be believed, the last letter of the Zodiac. The Zodiac Killer, throughout his correspondence, exhibited an overt interest in the theatrical, never more so than the Little List Lecture he mailed to the San Francisco Chronicle July 26, 1970. Paraphrasing extracts from The Mikado, a two-part comic opera by Gilbert and Sullivan, which opened to the paying public on March 15th of 1885 and was a huge success, and it ran for 672 performances. Not that we care about that, we care about the guy, but it also says he was interested in movies, and these movies, as mentioned, are like The Badlands, Red Phantom, or El Espectro Rojo, possibly the car, and then now on a dedicated letter that was sent possibly on October 28th of 1987, and the Exorcist letter, which referenced the Exorcist of 1973. The author also added Asian-style characters at the foot of the letter, reminiscent of Japanese stylism. The Zodiac used a blue felt tip pen while writing the letter, occasionally filling on the circular letters. Kevin Robert Brooks believes that the F-style symbol to be the word to, so when the symbol is recognized, say spell to kill. He stated something eerily similar in his first correspondence to authorities when he mailed part 2 of 3 of the 408 cipher on July 31st of 1969. He wrote, "Here is part of a cipher. The other two parts of the cipher are being mailed to the editors of the Vallejo Times and the San Francisco Examiner. I want you to print the cipher on the front page of your paper. In the cipher is my identity. If you do not print the cipher by the afternoon of Friday, the 1st of August, 69, I will go on a kill ram, you know, on Friday night." That is pretty much one of the ciphers. In both examples, the threat of non-publication would result in further consequences, including, you know, killing 12 people, blowing up a school bus, that type of thing. You can find that in part 1. Another striking comparison can be found in another authenticated correspondence of Donald that was mailed to the Billings Gazette in Montana on June 2nd of 1974. Just over 4 months after the receipt of the Exorcist letter, which we didn't really actually go into, but it just pretty much talked about the Exorcist and all of that other stuff. It also ridiculed the idea of demonic possession, stating if his work was impressive enough, we could then extend his services to Deer Lodge. To take up the money we could save by releasing depossessed people who would no longer require confinement. And exorcism, evil spirits, possession, I have a word to describe the so-called phenomenon, but I'll use his initials, BS, because I don't think that the editor would print my click, or, you know, the actual word bullshit. So that was sent to the Billings Gazette 4 months later, once again, after the Exorcist letter. And it's similar because it talks about exorcism, demonic possession, and that type of thing, which kind of did talk about in the Exorcist letter as well. Of course, Donald did write many letters to the Billings Gazette, and while it showed some parallels to the Zodiac Killer letters, many did not, though. However, this correspondence to the Billings Gazette held a little bit more than, you know, obviously what the other ones had. For example, I should say this. This is one expert from the Billings one. "I have been reading and hearing all about the Exorcist in Billings, which was stated in the Exorcist letter. The Zodiac Killer then also began. I saw and thanked the Exorcist with the best theatrical comedy that I have ever seen." And when we take those two phrases, we can see a similarity that doesn't really seem as heavy. It doesn't really seem threatening. It just takes it lightly as a comedy side. It also was worded according to phraseology. He also does make a reference to the Derelict prison and had purposely mentioned by the attacker at Lake Barissa on September 27th, 1969. On October 5th of 1970, exactly 13 years after the murder of Deputy Otto Forsine in 1957, 13 bullet holes was punched through the fabric of the 13-hole postcard that arrived at the San Francisco Chronicle with the words, FK, I'm crack proof. What is the price tag now? Kind of summer, you know. The murders took place in the 60s, possibly even farther, but from what we know, it had ended by the 70s, definitely 1970. If you see the sketch that was created by Kevin Robert Brooks, that was taken from a photograph of Donald Lead Bajak, you kind of see a similarity. You can notice there's very similar glasses of the original Zodiac sketch and Bajak sketch. You can kind of see a similarity in haircut. Once again, this was when the sketch of Dave or Donald was in his 40s, so it could have changed over time, whatnot, and he got it a little bit more heavier than what was the original sketch. Now, this is kind of an expert of a conversation between Brooks and a guy named Robert Smith and Michael, and you know, we're not going to go into that because that's just conversation. But according to this one guy, I'm going to point this out. This guy is named David Bajak. But he is relative to Donald Bajak, the same possible Zodiac killer that is being theorized here. He commented, I don't know who this guy thinks he is to drag my relative's last name to the mud. This is atrocious. And once I shared the information with my ailing grandfather, Donald's cousin, he was appalled at such a travesty. You either come up with some hard facts and evidence, or you stop dragging my relative through the mud with your crockpot theories. I don't appreciate people that do investigate the Zodiac Killer asking me questions because of my last name and being related to Donald. And, you know, according to Robin Smith, which I think wrote the article, if you want to post this question, just go to his YouTube video, comment down there. So, he still has relatives alive as of 2014. A lot of this, though, does seem very similar to the Zodiac. And if I confused you a little bit, you can research this yourself. Go online, you know, old Montana State Prison, Zodiac, all of that. Without further ado, I think that's it that I wanted to discuss with this episode. We did talk about possible suspects, whether or not that's all of them, you know, we did go into detail somewhat about what is known about every suspect. And I can guarantee you, if I search through some of those suspects, I'm gonna find a lot about them. Whether or not any of these guys, definitely the Stoner guy, is a Zodiac, until we crack one of the ciphers that proves any of these people are the Zodiac, all we can do is keep guessing about it. That's all we can do. It's all we will probably do. till we find out who he really is. Or was, I should say, because they hardly doubt the Zodiac's still alive. And if he is, he's probably in his 80s or 90s. But without further ado, stay tuned for Friday's new series, where we jump into Bonnie and Clyde, talk about their life, we talk about, you know, the crime that they did, what led to their death. We go into the autopsy. We probably will discuss some terms that is not really familiar outside of forensics and that general area, but don't worry, we will define them for you whenever they come up. Anyhow, see you Friday for our new series of the Postmortem Files.